Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Allen, Archuleta, Atkins, Bates, Bell, Borges, Bradford, Caballero, Chang, Daly, Dodd, Durazo, Galgiani, Glazer, Gonzalez, Grove, Hertzberg, Hill, Hueso, Hurtado, Jackson, Jones, Leyva, McGuire, Mitchell, Monning, Morlock, Morrell, Nielsen, Pan, Portantino, Roth, Rubio, Skinner, Stern, Umberg, Wieckowski, Wiener, Wilk.
Members, a quorum is present. Would the members and our guests beyond the rail and in the gallery please rise? We'll be led this morning in prayer by our chaplain, Sister Michelle Gorman, after which we'll ask you to remain standing and we'll be led in pledge this morning by Senator Daly.
Let us remember that we are in God's holy presence. Gracious God, as we remember the witness of unconditional love lived by Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., we ask you this day, help us seek out and acknowledge the reasons for our slow progress in dismantling racism. Help us to face our fears, resistance, pride, and shame, whatever conscious or unconscious motives hold us back from valuing an anti-racist, multicultural society. Guide our civic and religious decisions to uphold and promote the rights of all persons, especially those experiencing marginalization, injustice, bigotry, and prejudice. Continue to remind us that diversity is the hallmark of your creation, the manifestation of your presence in myriad sparks of your divine life on earth. We ask this in your name. Amen.
Members, please join me in our salute to our flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag
of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Our members, privileges of the floor, there are none. Messages from the governor will be deemed read. Messages from the assembly will be deemed read. Reports of committees will be deemed read and amendments adopted. Motions and notices. Approval of the daily journal. Without objection, the Senate journals for January 13th through the 17th, 2020 will be approved as corrected by the minute clerk. Introductions of bills, first readings, bills are deemed read.
Members, we're taking up consideration of the daily file. Moving on to item number 8, Senator Bradford.
Thank you, Madam President. I'm here today.
Excuse me, Madam Secretary, please read.
Senate Resolution 67 by Senator Bradford, relative to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Day.
Now, Senator Bradford.
Thank you, Madam President. I'm here to present Senate Resolution 67 honoring Dr. Martin Luther King. As Vice Chair of the Legislative Black Caucus, I stand here today honored to represent the caucus along with my colleague, Senator Holly Mitchell, to recognize the birthday of a great American. An American, if he had been alive today, would be 91. He would have celebrated his 91st birthday this past January 15th. An individual that we would agree was taken from us far too soon, an individual who accomplished many firsts, more so than many of us all combined. He had accomplished by the young age of 39. He had graduated high school by 15. He had acquired a college degree by the age of 19 and a PhD by the age of 26. I'm humbled to recognize again his dedicated life to nonviolence and the struggle for racial and economic equality in the United States and abroad. A man who often stated, if you haven't found anything worthy to die for, you're not fit for living. Well, a great man who was courageously willing to lay down his life as he did in the face of unrelenting violence, harassment, and threats of, to live so future generations would be safe. An individual who lived under the last 5 years under FBI, CIA, and constant police surveillance. An individual, when the autopsy was done, the doctor said he had a heart of a 60-year-old man based on the stress that he had lived under constantly. An individual who faced multiple death threats, the bombing of his house with his wife and children there, the stabbing himself in New York at a book signing, and the ultimate assassination in Selma. Dr. King was a man who strived to bring us together. And members, I ask that regardless of our party, we should be striving to serve our community in the same manner as Dr. King said. He often said, what are you doing for others? Because his life was of service. He often stated, we all can be great because we all can serve. Our verbs doesn't have to match our nouns. We don't need a college degree to be great. You just have to have a heart of love. And that's what he had. In 1964, Dr. King received the Nobel Peace Prize in Oslo, Norway, for his leadership, again, of the civil rights movement and his steadfast commitment to achieving racial justice through nonviolence. He was 35 years old, the youngest recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize. But getting there required a lot of trials and tribulations. He was arrested over 29 times in his life. Some of us are not willing to be arrested once for anything. And he received a monetary compensation from for his Nobel Peace Prize, which would be equivalent to about $100,000 a day. He donated it all to the civil rights movement, despite not being a wealthy man, and despite the objections of Coretta Scott King, his wife. And at 35, like I say, he became the youngest American to receive this prestigious award. Dr. King and the Civil Rights Movement helped change public policy from segregation to integration, resulting in a repeal of post-Reconstruction era state laws such as Jim Crow in the South, and helped enact the 1964 Civil Rights Act, the 1965 Voting Rights Act, and other anti-discrimination laws aimed at ending economic, legal, and social segregation in America. Again, taken from the far too soon, Dr. King was assassinated 52 years ago as he led the Poor People's March. He was there to organize sanitation workers in Selma who were being mistreated, underpaid, and even killed on the job. And we should look at Monday as not a day off, but a day on, a day of service, as Dr. King would want us to do. He would want us to go back into our communities and organize. He would want us to go back in our communities and fight against homelessness. He would want us to fight against police brutality. He would want us to fight against all the injustices that still exist 52 years after his death. Dr. King often said, our lives begin to end the day we become silent on the things that matter the most. It's some of us are dying here. He often said, at the end, we will remember not the words of our enemies, but the silence of our friends. There are too many of us, my friends, that are silent on the issues that matter most today in 2002, not only in California, but in this nation. I respectfully ask for our vote.
Senator Hertzberg.
Thank you, Madam President. Our unity is born of our common struggle for centuries, not only to rid ourselves of bondage, but to make oppression of any people by others an impossibility. These inspiring words, referenced by our esteemed Jewish Caucus Chair, Ben Allen, on this floor last year, were first spoken by Dr. Martin Luther King in his address to the National Convention of American Jewish Congress in May 1958. He was only 29 years old. Dr. King's words that day transcended the suffering of any one people and evoked a common vision for civil rights shared by the Jewish and African American communities. That sacred kinship and shared vision endured throughout the civil rights movement as Jews across this country stood firmly alongside Dr. King and other civil rights leaders and activists during the Mississippi Freedom Summer in 1964, the segregation protests in San Augustine, Florida, the same year, and the march on Selma in 1965. During that historic march across the Edmund Pettus Bridge, Dr. King stood arm in arm with one of the most towering figures in the Jewish moral imagination at that time, Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel. The march, he said, was so inspiring and so fulfilling for Heschel that later he recalled that his legs, he felt, were praying. 3 years later, 10 years after his address to the American Jewish Congress, and just 10 days before he was cut down by an assassin's bullet, Dr. King made one of his last public appearances at the 68th Annual Convention of the Rabbinical Assembly. He was again introduced by his dear friend and brother-in-arms, Rabbi Heschel. Martin Luther King is a sign that God has not forsaken the United States, the rabbi said. Martin Luther King is a voice, a vision, a way. The whole future of America will depend upon the impact and influence of Dr. King. How true this has been. From the moment of his assassination at the Lorraine Hotel in Memphis on April 4th, 1968, Martin Luther King Jr. belongs to the ages. But his legacy, his dream, lives on. His life and extraordinary bravery inspires all of us to continue the work for justice and equality here in this chamber. As Senator Bradford indicated, members, let's not forget that this was a man who was arrested and put in jail 29 times. When you have a voice and you have an idea, it's one thing to talk about it. It's another thing when somebody hits you over the head with a billy club. It's very different. He was assaulted 4 times, and his home with his wife and children was bombed. Think about any of us, what it's like for those struggles, what it means to stand tall for what you believe in. It's one thing, as I say, to give a speech. It's a whole other thing to risk everything you have, including your family, in devotion to it. We honor him not by making speeches or passing resolutions, as Senator Bradford said, but how we conduct ourselves every single day in the respect and compassion we show to others in every aspect of our lives, and in the courage and humility we bring to the task of making the world a better place. In Hebrew, we say, Zikrono Livraha, may his memory be for a blessing, and may the dream he shared and fought to realize remind us of what is possible in a world and what is still left to be done. And as Sister Gorman said, he was a man of unconditional love. That is a critical point to make. On behalf of the members of the esteemed Legislative Jewish Caucus, I respectfully ask for your aye vote on SR 67.
Senator DeRazzo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As Vice Chair of the California Latino Legislative Caucus, it is my pleasure to rise in strong support of SR 67, which commemorates the life, the struggles, and the legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King. His life serves as an example of how one person can have an impact on all of our lives. He stood for the value of unity and the power of solidarity. He inspired our civil rights leaders across the country, not only in the Jewish community, in the Latino community. He connected with Cesar Chavez and Dolores Huerta and the farm workers movement to make the movement for nonviolence and direct action the strongest and most powerful movement in our country. Nide did that in the struggles for farm worker rights. He held honest conversations. He gave powerful speeches about the many issues relevant in our society today, including civil rights, women's rights, and the pro-peace, anti-war movement, for which he was criticized. Today, we fight many of the same injustices that Dr. King fought for and for which he paid the ultimate price. African Americans and Latinos continue to face racism in education, have fewer opportunities for economic prosperity, and we continue to be targeted for incarceration and detention at higher rates than other Americans. We are demonized and judged on the color of our skin and not in the content of our character. We see this in the rhetoric coming from our federal administration and the policies that they propose, including the treatment of asylum workers at the border and the separation of babies from their mothers. Today, as we celebrate and honor Dr. King and his legacy, let us acknowledge the many, many community leaders and activists and individuals who followed Dr. King's vision, his spirit, and his dream. Gracias, Dr. King. Si se puede. I'm proud to stand in support of this resolution and try hard to do my part to honor Dr. King's legacy by advocating for the most vulnerable and fighting for social and economic prosperity for all. I respectfully ask for your vote.
Dr. Penn.
Thank you, Madam President, Senators. I, too, rise in strong support of this resolution. I want to thank my good friend from Gardenia for bringing this forward as Vice Chair of the Asian Pacific Islander Legislative Caucus. Know how important it is to recognize Dr. King, who not only, of course, was a huge champion for civil rights for the black community, but for all of us. And I here in Sacramento, actually last year, we celebrated. Dr. King had come to Sacramento State to speak toward actually one of his last speeches he gave in his life. In remembering that occasion, we pointed out that as Dr. King seemed to have, be adulated today by most people here in our country, that time right before his death, he was not. In fact, it was when he came to Sacramento State, here to my community, he was not someone who was being looked up upon because he had the courage to always fight for what he believed in, what was right for civil justice, and that's not always popular. That's not always something that people praise you for. In fact, we talked about Dr. King being arrested multiple times, and of course, the hate that he endured, and also even to the degree of physical assaults on him and his family. It takes courage. And I think if anything else, as we celebrate Dr. King, I mean, as I said, it's not a day off, it's a day on Monday when we celebrate his day. But it's something we need to celebrate every day and to celebrate the courage he had. And I think that's the beacon in which we should really be remembering him by, his courage and to emulate that courage in standing up for what's right. Again, I want to thank my good friend from Gardenia for bringing this resolution forward. Thank you.
Senator Morlock.
Thank you, Madam President. I was 12 years old when the assassination of Martin Luther King occurred, and it was a very impactful event. And so when my brother was able to take a position in the vicinity of Memphis, Tennessee, one of the sites I wanted to visit was the Lorraine Motel and the National Civil Rights Museum. I would encourage all of you to put it on your bucket list. If you have not visited, it is very inspiring. The Motel Lorraine, the owner would block off the two rooms, and that's where the tour of the museum concludes. It's very profound, very moving. Martin Luther King gave a very interesting speech the day before he was assassinated, and it was called the "I've Been to the Mountaintop," referring to Moses and Mount Nebo, and I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you, but I'm not fearing any man. So he was a man without fear, with determination and spirit, and an incredible example. So thank you, Martin Luther King. Thank you, Madam President.
Senator Wiener.
Thank you, Madam President. I rise as chair of the LGBTQ Legislative Caucus in support of the resolution. I thank the author for bringing it. Martin Luther King is an inspiration for all civil rights movements here and around the world, and in so many ways redefined what it means to fight for the civil rights of a community. I also want to note that one of Dr. King's closest advisors and allies, Bayard Rustin, was a gay man who was horribly mistreated by the criminal justice system and by members of Congress as a way of attacking Dr. King, because heaven forbid he associated with a gay man. And so that is, I think, an important thing to note about Dr. King, is that he was about, in so many ways, intersectionality in an era when that wasn't always the case. We also need to remember that today, within our LGBT community, we continue to have huge inequities. Rates of HIV infections among gay black men are very disproportionate to the rest of the community. Black women also disproportionately impacted by new HIV infections, as well as lack of access to care. We know that our transgender community is very much at physical risk in terms of violence, assaults, murders, but very disproportionately it's black trans women who are being attacked and murdered. So today we have so much work to do, the work that Dr. King helped move forward. We need to finish the work, and so I urge an aye vote.
Seeing no further comments, Senator Bradford, you may conclude.
Thank you, and I want to thank all my colleagues who lent their voice to this measure, and especially to my colleague from Orange County, who I misspoke when I said he was in Selma, and it was correct. He was in Memphis leading garbage workers on the day before he was assassinated. And the Lorraine Motel, if you haven't visited, is a great historical spot for all the wrong reasons, but one that is worth visiting nonetheless. And it's somewhat ironic, many times when we talk about Dr. King, we talk about one particular speech, "I Have a Dream." But if you've ever listened to that speech in its entirety, that was not the speech he was giving. He was giving a speech on the urgency of now, on a nation that it made a promise to all people, black as well as white, the promise of freedom, and that this nation had wrote the Negro an insufficient check, that it failed to live up to the promise of the Emancipation Proclamation. And he stated that a nation of its great wealth is not bankrupt, but it is when it comes to the Negro. And he says, 100 years after the signing of the Emancipation Proclamation, a monumentous decree came to be a great beacon of light for millions of Negro slaves who had been seared by the flames of withering injustice. It came as a joyous daybreak to the end of a night of their captivity. But 100 years later, the Negro is still not free. 100 years later, the life of the Negro is still sadly crippled by the manacles of segregation and the chains of discrimination. 100 years later, the Negro lives in a lonely island of poverty in the midst of vast oceans of material prosperity. 100 years later, the Negro is still languishing in the corners of American society and finds himself an exile in his own land. So we come here today to dramatize the shameful conditions of America. And I could go on and speak to the fact that, again, in a sense, we've come to this nation to cash a check. When the architect of this republic wrote the magnificent words of the Constitution and Declarations of Independence, they were signing a promissory note to which every American falls heir. This note was promised to all men, yes, black men as well as white men, that would be guaranteed unalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. I would wish you learned the speech, because he was finished, almost finished with his speech. And it was then Mahalia Jackson who had sang just before he took the stage, and she says, tell him about the dream, Martin. Tell him about the dream. And he impromptu went to a speech that he had given many times about I Have a Dream. But I ask you to learn the first 3 minutes of that speech and understand that he says, the Negro in the South cannot vote, and the Negro in New York feels he has nothing to vote for. He spoke to all of those, that black kids seeing signs of white only and what that meant to them. So let's understand what was all in that speech. I also ask that when you sing happy birthday, many times this week I celebrated a birthday and many of my colleagues came to my office and I appreciate that. And many often say, do we want to sing the regular song or the Stevie Wonder version? Many don't know. That was a song written to help pass a national recognition celebrating Dr. King's birthday by Stevie Wonder. Listen to the words. It was a dedication to Stevie Wonder. He wrote that song in 1980 to put pressure on this federal government. He brought millions of signatures to Washington, D.C., fighting for making Dr. King's birthday a national holiday. We first made an attempt in 1979, and it fell 5 votes short in Congress. Jimmy Carter wanted to sign it. But thanks to Ronald Reagan, he signed it in 1983. And we celebrated it for the first time in 1986. So we celebrate 34 years of celebrating Dr. King's birthday. And we all should be honored. But again, I ask you to learn the song as well, because it was not just about a birthday. It was about the celebration of Dr. King's life. And I will close with these words of Dr. King. There's nothing in this world more dangerous than sincere ignorance and conscientious stupidity. I will say this again, there's nothing in this world more dangerous than sincere ignorance and conscientious stupidity. We see a lot of that going on in this country right now. I respectfully ask for our aye vote on SCR 67.
Thank you, Senator Bradford. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Allen. Archuleta.
Aye.
Aye. Atkins.
Aye.
Aye. Bates.
Aye.
Bell.
Aye.
Borges.
Aye.
Bradford.
Aye.
Caballero.
Aye.
Chang.
Aye.
Daly.
Aye.
Dodd.
Aye.
Durazo.
Aye.
Galgiani.
Aye.
Glazer.
Aye.
Gonzalez.
Aye.
Grove. Hertzberg.
Aye.
Hill.
Aye.
Hueso.
Aye.
Hurtado.
Aye.
Jackson.
Aye.
Jones. Leyva.
Aye.
McGuire.
Aye.
Mitchell. Monning.
Aye.
Morlock.
Aye.
Morrell.
Aye.
Nielsen.
Aye.
Pan.
Aye.
Portantino.
Aye.
Roth.
Aye.
Rubio. Skinner.
Aye.
Stern.
Aye.
Umberg.
Aye.
Wieckowski.
Aye.
Wiener.
Aye.
Wilk.
Aye.
Aye.
Ayes 34, no 0. The resolution is adopted. Moving on to, we have finished the consideration of the daily file. We're going to move on to motions and resolutions. Senator Wiener, you have a adjourn in memory.
Thank you, Madam President. Colleagues, it's with great sadness that I rise to adjourn in memory of a former colleague of mine in the San Francisco City Attorney's Office, Buck Delventhal, who was a devoted public servant to the city of San Francisco for almost a half a century and a beacon of integrity. On Saturday, October 26, Buck passed away at the age of 76, surrounded by his family. His death was was not expected. It was just a terrible tragedy and surprise for everyone. Buck was born on November 12, 1942 in Oakland, was raised in Piedmont, and attended Piedmont High School. After graduating from UC Davis, he earned his law degree from UC Hastings College of the Law in 1969. In 1970, he joined the San Francisco City Attorney's Office, embarking on what would be a nearly 50-year career as a deputy city attorney for our great city of San Francisco. Buck was at the center of the city's response to the assassination of Mayor George Moscone and Supervisor Harvey Milk in 1978. He wrote the opinion on how the supervisors should select the next mayor. Harvey Milk was dead, Dan White was in jail, and then Supervisor Dianne Feinstein couldn't vote for herself. Buck interpreted the charter and decided that of the eight remaining supervisors, it would take six votes, not five, to make a majority. That was actually quite an important decision because it helped determine the future of the city for years to come. Buck's dedication and unparalleled legal brilliance for San Francisco cemented his role as what we would call the oracle of our city charter. If Buck ever gave an interpretation that you didn't like and you tried to get someone to give a different interpretation, the fact was that Buck would always prevail, and I sometimes learned this to my detriment if I disagreed with him, because he knew our city charter and our city laws and traditions better than anyone, and he was truly brilliant. I had the great privilege of working with him, and it was an honor to call him a friend and a neighbor. He is survived by his wife and two children. Please join me in adjourning today in memory of Buck Delventhal.
Thank you, Senator Wiener. Please bring the name forward and make sure we properly adjourn. Next up for adjourning memory is Senator Layla.
Thank you, Mr. President. Good morning, members. It is with great sadness that I ask that we adjourn today in the memory of Alan Joseph Urkowski, who died suddenly this past Monday at the age of 45. I'm sorry. Alan was married to my chief of staff, Cameron. I practiced a lot last night. Didn't help. And his passing comes as a tremendous shock to all of us, and certainly to his family and his friends that loved him so deeply. Alan brought light to everyone's lives with his humor, his kindness, his fierce bravery. And if you knew him, you knew that he knew how to tell a great story. Every time I ever spoke to Alan, I'll never forget his wit and the way he made you feel like he'd known you forever. And he always made you laugh and smile. Without a doubt, Alan was always ready to have your back if you ever needed him. He spent most of his life, his professional life, as a bartender, so we know that made him a therapist to many. Having been born and raised in Sacramento, everywhere he went, he ran into someone he knew. Alan leaves a lasting mark on so many people whom he crossed paths with, both at work and in the community. But above all else, Alan was loved by his wife and his family, and spent the last years devoted to them and always teaching him that we should live, that living and being nice is not enough. We should live our lives with kindness. Alan is survived by his wife, Cameron, daughter, Carolina, and stepchildren, Joseph and Maya. For those who know Alan and Cameron, a memorial will be following in the next few weeks and details will follow. I would ask that we all continue to live in his legacy of kindness, loyalty, and love. Please join me in adjourning in the memory of Alan Joseph Urkowski. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Leva. We'll extending our deepest condolences on behalf of the California State Senate to his family. Please make sure the name is brought forward so it can be properly memorialized. Next is Senator Skinner for your adjourning memory.
Thank you. Members, I ask that you join me in adjourning in memory for Art Shanks. Art Shanks was a well-known civil rights, workforce, and economic development advocate who founded Oakland's Cypress Mandela Training Program. The Cypress Mandela Training Program was the very first green jobs construction program, and brownfields training program ever. And Art was a construction worker who, when the Loma Prieta earthquake occurred in 1989, and those of you who remember, that freeway structure collapsed in Oakland. Art was driving by right before the collapse and felt the earthquake, and then, because he lived in the area, immediately, as most Oakland, West Oakland residents did, went to the structure to try to help rescue people. After the, you know, once all of the years took place, but there was a plan to rebuild West Oakland, to not put up that freeway again, because it had divided that community. It was a very low-income community. And instead, a road was put through called Cypress Mandela, and Art was inspired, along with his brother, to found this training center to provide this workforce development and job training to those residents, first West Oakland, but beyond now the whole East Bay, who have been, in effect, failed by our education system or were justice system impacted or the like. So the people that the Cypress Mandela Training Program trained were people without high school degrees, people with records, people that otherwise were not really going to get a decent job. And when they joined up with the Mandela Training Center, they had to commit to a year. And for the first number of months, they were not paid. And Art insisted upon that because he wanted to make sure that they were willing to make the commitment to really get the training, which included life skills. It wasn't only the workforce skills. That training center partnered with AC Transit, with BART, with PG&E, and graduates went on. It was a pre-apprenticeship program, and those partnerships led to hundreds of those graduates going into state-certified apprenticeship programs and then getting jobs at places like PG&E. And if you look up the OBIT, you will see many PG&E workers basically describe how they have a job today and they have that type of work due to their being in the Cypress Mandela training program. In 2007, Art received the Workforce Development Award for Excellence from the National Association of Counties. In 2005, he received the Exemplary Public Interest Contribution Award by the U.S. Department of Labor. He received many, many recognitions nationally and locally, including the Jefferson Award in recognition of supporting workforce development in Oakland. He died unexpectedly. He passed away December 29th at the young age of 64. All of West Oakland, the East Bay, Art's family and friends will dearly miss his visionary leadership.
On behalf of the California State Senate, we extend our deepest condolences and please bring the name forward so it can be properly memorialized. Members, if there's no further business, Senator Atkins, the desk is clear.
Thank you, Mr. President. And colleagues, I hope you have an incredibly wonderful weekend back home in your districts, hopefully enjoying many tributes to the Honorable Martin Luther King. I know we all have events that we will be doing, and I hope you have a great weekend doing that. And I will see you all. We will reconvene on Tuesday, January 21st at 2 p.m. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Madam Pro Tem. The Senate will be in recess until 3:30, at which time an adjournment motion will be made. We'll reconvene the Senate on Tuesday at 2 p.m. We stand in recess.